You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast. It is Thursday, July 19th, 2018, and I am your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. As always, if you like this show, subscribe to it on either iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. It is Thursday, which means it's mailbag day on the podcast, and we got a lot of great questions, both emailed to me and left in the comments section of GangreneNation.com. In fact, we have so many that I think we probably have enough for two mailbags this week, so we'll probably have another mailbag tomorrow as we head toward the weekend and continue to move closer to training camp. So let's jump right in. Our first question was emailed to me from Jason C. Hi, John. Love the podcast. Been a long-time listener. But after the recent comments of Ben McAdoo, I have to send this question. And McAdoo, of course, is the former head coach of the New York Giants. He was fired last year. McAdoo was recently interviewed by NJ.com, and he commented on Sam Darnold. He said that he would have a hard time justifying picking someone in the first round where you don't like the way he throws. What is he talking about? I've heard about Sam's ball control issues, but I've never heard anyone say he has poor throwing mechanics. Is McAdoo just talking out of his doo-doo, or is there some validity to this? Thanks, Jason. And I think Jason indicates he's a Marine, so Jason, thank you for your service to our country. So what McAdoo was talking about, I think, was Darnold's throwing motion, and it's something that's relatively well-known. And if you go back, we had Sam as a guest on our podcast a little while back, and he talked a little bit about his throwing mechanics, is that his motion, it was kind of elongated, which means he doesn't get the ball out as quick as you would like. And in today's NFL offenses, where a lot of offenses are based around short rhythm passes where you want to get the ball out, it can make a difference because it, you know, gives the defender maybe a split second to break on the ball. You know, windows close very quickly in the NFL. They can close in less than a second. So any wasted motion, and the issue with Darnold is that he brings the ball down as he's delivering it, which doesn't really serve any purpose. And Darnold talked about how he was working on that, how he scientifically, through the use of some technology, realized that adding that extra motion to his delivery was not adding any extra velocity. It wasn't helping him at all. It was just wasted motion. It was time that was just wasted because the ball wasn't getting out quick enough. It gives the defender a split second extra to react to the balls. But now the good news is Darnold's been working on it. So we'll see once training camp begins, once the preseason begins, the extent to which that's true. What I'd say about McAdoo is, it's very easy to kick the guy when he's down because he had a horrendous year last year. To lose your job, to go to the playoffs in year one and get fired before your second season ends, you have to do a, I mean, it has to be really, really bad. And it's easy to mock him, and it's fun to mock him too. I mean, the slick back hair, the ridiculous press conferences he had. Look, he's a guy in the NFL though. He's entitled to his opinion. It's his opinion. The other thing I'd say, though, is that's just one opinion. I think the much greater consensus is that Darnold's an excellent pick. You know, Darnold, McAdoo's one guy in the NFL who feels that maybe Darnold was not worth a first-round pick. I think a lot more people in the NFL think Darnold definitely was worth a first-round pick. So, you know, that's what he's talking about. I think he's talking about the throwing motion being just too long. It's Darnold not getting the ball out quickly enough because there's wasted motion. But I think if you look at what Darnold brings to the table, and I've told you, I mean, I told you many times that I feel like he was a guy I wanted a lot. If you ask me the two guys, who did I want? I either wanted Darnold or I wanted Rosen. So I'm very happy with, you know, I think despite the throwing motion, which he can fix, it's not a case where Darnold's never going to be able to fix this. But despite that, I think he just brings so much to the table that I'm pretty happy to have him. Next question. When Darrell Revis, of course, retired this week, the great former Jets corner, when Revis goes to the Hall of Fame, will he go in as a Jet? And you don't go, I mean, you don't pick a team the way you do in baseball. See, in baseball, when your plaque has a hat on it, so you have to pick which team, or I'm not sure exactly how they do it. I know sometimes the Hall of Fame chooses for the player, but you wear the hat of one team on your plaque. The NFL doesn't do, the Pro Football Hall of Fame doesn't do things the same way. So it's not quite the, it's not quite you go in as a member of a team, but I think that more to the point of the question, look, Revis is going to be remembered as a Jet. It's where he played the vast majority of his career. I mean, he had what, 1 year in Tampa Bay, 1 year in New England, and a couple games in Kansas City. The Jets were the team that drafted him. It's the team where he played the bulk of his career. It's the team where he developed into a superstar, into a household name. It's where he had to, it's where he had his best season. So I don't think there's any question that Darrelle Revis is a Jet. I mean, you know, Revis is a Buck or a Patriot or a Chief as much as Brett Favre was a Jet or LaDainian Tomlinson was a Jet. The Jets have had a lot of great players kind of pass through near the end of their career. LaDainian Tomlinson, Ronnie Lott, Art Monk. Oh, God, the Jets have had a lot of the Jason Taylor. Just have had a lot of those guys that kind of passed through, but I think Revis is pretty clearly a Jet. I mean, I think you're really, really stretching if you want to say Darrelle Revis will be remembered as anything other than a New York Jet. He was, and he's a, it's an odd case. I wrote about this I wrote about this earlier in the week. It's an odd case because the Jets have not had many great homegrown players in their history. And Revis is one of them. Revis is a legit. Now, I don't know if he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer because his Hall of Fame case is a little more complicated because it's based around his peak. He did not age gracefully. He was not a great player into his 30s the way a Deion Sanders was. He was not, you know, he didn't transition to a new position the way Rod Woodson or Charles Woodson did. You know, he wasn't a guy who's played very well into a later age like Darryl Green did. So that complicates things a little bit. So that, I think that takes him out of the discussion of greatest player of all time, because in addition to great, great years, those guys also kind of aged gracefully. They had other good years or they moved to a different position. Revis had kind of a stretch where he was great and then his career was over. So, you know, that has to factor in. But his peak was probably as good as anybody's. So I think that pretty clearly makes him a Hall of Famer. Now, does it make it make him a first ballot Hall of Famer? I don't know. That's a different question. But I think he'll, you know, I think he's pretty clearly going to get in. And when he does get in, he's a New York Jet. Make no mistake about it. And it's kind of an odd situation because he's the rare great player the Jets have developed, and yet he's not beloved by the fan base because of the contract stuff, because he went to New England, which is not something Jets fans like, with good reason. So with all those other complicating factors, you know, he was kind of a mercenary. He's not beloved the way you'd think a great homegrown player would be for this franchise, but he was a great player nonetheless, and I'm pretty confident he'll end up in the Hall of Fame. And when he does end up in the Hall of Fame, people will remember him as a New York Jet. This episode is brought to you by Core Essentials. That's K-O-R-E, Core Essentials, and they make the best belt you'll ever own. What makes the Core track belt so awesome? No belt holes. That's right. Instead, their belts use a hidden track in the back of the belt with over 40 size points to choose from. Ever wonder why your pants slip and turn that waistline into a gut? Every day as you work, walk, eat, and play, your waist size fluctuates, in and out just a little at a time. The Core belt adjusts to match your waist exactly. Each point on the Core track belt is just a quarter inch apart. That simple, small innovation means you get a precise, steady, and comfortable fit every time you put it on. Removing or adjusting your track belt is simple. Pinch the small tab under the buckle. Core's patented design also makes it easy to remove the buckle or swap styles. Core track belts ship one size to fit every waist from 24 to 44 inches with an XL belt that goes up to 54 inches. You adjust the size yourself using their easy guide. Core offers a full line of fashion belts, including classic double stitch with full grain leather and smooth belts with no stitching. They also offer a stylish assortment of buckle faces made using solid stainless steel or high-grade zinc alloys. Core's men's belts carry a 30-day money-back guarantee and a full one-year warranty against all defects, unusual wear, or breakage. So feel confident when you shop and know that you're covered. But trust me, you're going to love it and you're going to want to get rid of all the other belts. Visit coreessentials.com to learn more and to get your own Core track belt and to see firsthand why it's the best belt you'll ever own. Seriously, once you go to Core track, you'll never go back. And we've got a special offer for our listeners. Save 10% off your order when you use our code LOCKEDON at checkout. That's Core with a K, K-O-R-E, essentials.com, and use the code LOCKEDON to save 10% off your order. Next question. Why do you think the Jets have been so unsuccessful at drafting players in the second round? And, you know, prior to Marcus May last year, I mean, it has been they had a ghastly decade in the second round. Between David Harris and Marcus May, I mean, they're really no good players the Jets have drafted in the second round. it's unbelievable. And I think the answer is the simple answer, though, is they've had bad people drafting. They've had bad GMs making the pick, poor front off, poor scouting. I think it's that simple, because you go through the other rounds. Round three, they haven't been that good. Round four, you know, the days where, you know, they had that stretch in the 2000s where they, in a couple of years, they drafted Leon Washington, Brad Smith, Jericho Cotchery, Kerry Rhodes all in the fourth round. But since then, I mean, it's not like they've been hitting it out of the park in the fourth round. Late round, they haven't found players. So, you know, it's not just the second round. I mean, they've just not drafted that well to begin with. And, you know, they've had some pretty ghastly first round misses as well. So it's just bad scouting. That's what it comes down to. I think that's really, what the issue has been for the Jets. You know, sometimes the simplest answer is the obvious one. It's not, you know, it's not a case of bad luck where the team's been hitting it out of the park in the third round and missing in the second round. You know, then you'd have a little bit of a different case. Then you'd be able to say, boy, something weird's going on. I mean, they've just been bad at drafting. They've had bad front offices, bad GM. And hopefully the tide's starting to turn a little bit. You know, hopefully things are going to start to look up for this team. You know, we'll see how this year's draft class works. Last year's looks promising on some level. So hopefully the tide is starting to turn a little bit. Next question. Where would you rank Revis among the greatest Jets players ever? I think Namath is the most important, but I think Maynard, Curtis Martin, or Revis all have an argument for the greatest. I think Namath's the greatest. Namath's a guy I think people sell short. I think there's this mistaken view. The problem is people look at stats from Namath's era in a 2018 context, because if you compare Namath's stats to the quarterbacks of today, they're not going to look that great. But you have to remember that he's the only guy who ever did that. He was the only guy who ever threw 4,000 yards in a 14-game season, so that counts for a lot. You know, he was twice the league's MVP in the AFL. You know, before his injuries, he was a fantastic quarterback. He's a legitimate Hall of Famer. So I think Namath is the greatest player in franchise history. I don't think Revis is on the Mount Rushmore, to be honest with you. I think Revis is a great player. Revis should be in the Ring of Honor. He's one of the, and he, again, I think he should be a Hall of Famer, but I think that your Mount Rushmore, which are the four great players, if you hypothetically carved out a Mount Rushmore of Jets greats, which, you know, there are only four spots, I think it's Namath, it's Maynard, it's Klecko, and it's Curtis Martin. I think Revis falls a little short again. I think the longevity hurts him a little bit. So I put Revis behind those guys. So I'd say, and I think, and I'm not even sure. I think if you go back to the Namath days, there are some other guys you could argue in the mix there. So I think he's a legit Ring of Honor player. I don't think he's really in that. I think there was a point where he looked like he may end as maybe one of the top two players in franchise history, but I don't think that he's going to end up there. I think he's a legitimate Ring of Honor player. I think he's a legitimate Hall of Famer, but I don't think that he's, quite on that level. Next question. Draft picks bust all the time, as we are fully aware. The Hackenberg pick has taken a lot of heat. It busted big time, no doubt about it, but this team has needed a quarterback forever, it seems like. If you think a guy could be the guy, don't you have to make the pick? They were wrong, and plenty of people thought they were wrong at the time, but I don't see it as one of the huge mistakes of this GM. He gambled for a quarterback. It's not written in stone that a second rounder is going to turn out to be a roster player. Every pick is a gamble. Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think that I agree with that if a guy has upside. What was the upside with Hackenberg? You have to be able to evaluate these guys. On some level, you have to be able to evaluate these guys. And what skills did Hackenberg have that suggested that he should be in a second-round pick? I mean, I just can't. It's one thing if you miss on a guy like Geno Smith, where the guy was a very good college player. He was very accurate in college. He, you know, there were some question marks about the system he played in. There were some question marks about, you know, some of the other things, about some of the other aspects of him on the field. But he was a guy who was a very good college player. You saw skills that could translate. Hackenberg showed you no skills. I mean, look, at some point you have to. Yeah, I understand that you sometimes a calculated gamble's worth it, but you can't justify every pick. The Jets draft media is a quarterback in the second round. That's a terrible pick. You know, you have to draw the line somewhere. At some level, you have to be able to scout. There was no chance this was ever going to work out because the player had no skills. So that's the problem. This is not a calculated gamble. It's a case where the Jets took a guy who stunk, and the guy stunk, and it was so foreseeable. Anybody could have seen that. Anybody should have been able to see it. So no, this was a terrible pick. I understand the point you're making. And I think if you're talking about a guy like Geno Smith, who showed you some skills in college, had some tools you thought maybe you could work with, who you weren't totally sold on, okay, fine, that's one thing. but they draft a guy who has no skills. And you can't say that's bad luck. That's bad scouting, because the problems with this guy were as clear as day. And the things he brought to the table were non-existent. So that was a bad pick. I have to say, Hackenberg was a brutal pick. Our last question, would you rather have the Jets own the most fashionable uniform kit in the league and go 0-16, or have the worst uniform kit in the league and go 16-0? And that one's pretty easy. Look, I want the Jets to have good uniforms. I don't want to have the Jets put on monstrosities like Cleveland or Miami or Tampa Bay have, you know, these awful new uniforms that you see coming to the league year after year. I don't want to see new ugly uniforms. But at the end of the day, I'm still going to watch the Jets even if they have ugly uniforms. The reason I watch the team is not because of the uniforms. The reason I watch the team is because I want to see the team win. I want to see the team have success. So pretty clear for me, as I'd rather have the worst. I'd rather not have ugly uniforms. But if this is the choice that's been presented to me, if you say, you make me a deal and say, John, we will give the Jets the ugliest uniforms in the league, but they will go 16-0. Will you take that deal? Absolutely. I'll sign up today. I'll sign up today. The uniforms are not that big of a deal. They're not that, listen, I want good-looking uniforms, but they're not that big of a deal. Well, that'll do it for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy the show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes if you do enjoy it. Hope you have a great day. We'll talk again tomorrow.